spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
Hi.
Hello and welcome, Alabama football podcast fans. Have we got a treat for you? We are meeting with Tommy, not our Tommy, but LSU Tommy. Tommy with Talking Tigs podcast. He hops on the line with us, and we break down the upcoming LSU game, and we talk through the coaching search, who they might be looking for, sort of names and events that they might have in mind. Talk a little bit about Coach O. Talk about some of the players and some of the behaviors, patterns that some of the players are sort of demonstrating there. So it's really interesting, a good conversation, and certainly someone we'll look to have back on prior to future LSU games. So a lot of conversation. At this point, I'm going to hand it over to the podcast. Go. Hey, welcome back, podcast fans. Have we got a treat for you? We've got Tommy with Talking Tigs podcast. Tommy, how are you tonight?
Doing great. Thank you for having us on.
Fantastic. Hey, there's a lot of things to talk about with the LSU game coming up. This has been, you know, there was a run there where it was the annual game of the century, and there's a lot of feelings between Alabama and LSU, if you will. And, you know, some of those go back quite a ways. But why don't we jump in? Friendly football conversation. I will start off the field a little bit, and then we'll run through position groups. I think the shiny topic when it comes, any media outlet out there, right? The shiny topic when it comes to LSU football is the coaching search. So let me ask you, from the perspective of the fan, who are the preferred targets?
I mean, the preferred, I think you could ask every LSU fan will have a different choice. And that's kind of, it's one of the toughest jobs in the country, because the, I almost think, and you'll appreciate this, of course, with so much success that Alabama's had, I don't know. I wonder what it would be like if and when Alabama ever started to kind of fall, because LSU has had a lot of sustained success. We haven't gotten the rings, but it's been always in the conversation, top four teams. And when you really look at college football, especially with the way the sport is going right now, there's really four elite programs. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And Alabama's one of them. And Clemson's one of them. Ohio State's one of them. And maybe Oklahoma, you could kind of argue that they're always in the conversation. But the question for LSU is, and I think that was a question that Scott Woodward had to answer when he first came in as the athletic director. And it's something that he's evidently thinks he's getting closer to the answer was Ed Orgeron the guy to take us to cement us as that you know, fourth or fifth elite program that's just continually competing for championships? Obviously, he doesn't feel that way. I think that there's a lot of people saying. I mean, I was at a dinner earlier this week with a member of the Louisiana Board of Regents, and it's a very government and the LSU football job. It's the highest paid state job, mm-hmm. and the legislature, the governor, it's as much a political job as it is like a football job, yep. or an administrative university job. So, you know, these big, my day job is I work in government relations. So, and it's interesting the way that the things will intertwine. So I'm at a, you know, event where I would never think I would be talking to somebody who's has to do anything with LSU football. And then that's the number one conversation. And, yeah. you know, I've heard, I mean, especially after a big win against Michigan this past Saturday, Mel Tucker is somebody who has been, he's been continually in talks. I think his star is getting a little bit higher now with that win against Michigan. That was a statement win for him.
It was.
But I don't know. I think that, you know, the Gary Patterson firing or parting ways, that's a really interesting one. I remember when people were talking about firing Les Miles years ago, Gary Patterson was one of the names that would come up a lot. And the thing would be, well, you know, he's not leaving TCU. He's been there forever. Why would he leave? Or I don't know. But I think that's an interesting one. Of course, Lane Kiffin's been in the talks. I heard from that kind of high profile guy I was talking to, if LSU gets told no enough, Lane Kiffin will be the one. if it kind of goes, they I don't know how much you've kind of followed the coaching search, but supposedly they've reached out to James Franklin, and the talks didn't go well, whatever, between however, you know, whether it was him or whether it was his agent, or kind of, it just didn't gel. It wasn't a great rapport so far. So if they have a hard time filling that job, which I think is almost more troubling than if they have a hard time getting someone to say yes, I think it's more troubling than whoever the person is, because it's about the, you know, I always look at it as about the program, not about the man who leads the team or the individual players on the field. But, you know, who knows? We might have to settle with Lane Kiffin. I don't know if that's necessarily settling, but that, you know, those are some names to watch.
No, I think, you know, Matt Barry, ESPN personality, not my favorite, but, you know, I thought he pegged it, and, you know, it was a pretty thick branch that he stepped out on. But if LSU gets the right coach, you know, you mentioned the top four or five programs, sometimes right at that limit, you know, LSU hovers right there, and the right coach getting everything pulled in the right direction, I think LSU could be quite something to see. Saban spent a number of years there, and it was incredible what he was able to do there. So I think the right coach landing the job there at LSU, it's limitless potential what they could do. Lane Kiffin is interesting because now I say this from a little bit of a distance, and he was our offensive coordinator for a little bit, and I just saw Saturday's game against Auburn, right? I think Lane Kiffin would be a spectacular three or four seasons, but you could almost predict that it wouldn't end well. What's the fan base thought? And maybe I shouldn't say it out loud, because when I look across LSU sites, I don't see his name mentioned. But what do you think about Billy Napier?
You know, I think that Billy Napier is someone who's talked about a lot. There's a lot of people who I think everybody in the state of Louisiana has respect for what he's done with Lafayette. Now, of course, you know, it's interesting for me, for most people here, it's UL Lafayette, ULL. It's a directional school, the same way that, you know, Georgia Southern is not Georgia.
Right.
They've done a very good job of positioning themselves as the University of Louisiana. As you watch on ESPN on the bumper, when they play Coastal Carolina, it's going to say Coastal Carolina. It's going to say Louisiana, but there's nothing that's all just marketing.
Yeah.
And that's a great job by them. And it's done. I think that's honestly, I think that just a little bit of, you know, change on the jersey, change on the scoreboard. It means a lot for recruiting for them. I think it's a good pitch for them to say, hey, like we're just as important, but in the down here, it's not the same. And I think that there are a lot of people, especially kind of like what I alluded to with this is as much a political and the elite of the elite in Louisiana have a lot of say in how this job is going to be filled. And as far as donors, as far as boosters, as far as big time business people, because, you know, they're cutting the checks a lot of times for the athletics and the donations to the program and everything. I don't think they're going to want the ULL, the Lafayette coach, to be the leader of the Tigers.
Sure.
And you know, it's interesting. You mentioned about kind of how LSU does have that potential to be another top program. And I don't really think that's necessarily a homer take, just because the dynamics of the state, like we don't have an Auburn. There is no other. It's just the way we are. Like we don't have a competing top level program, a Florida State to a Florida or something like that. So, and then with the recruiting that we have this hotbed of recruiting. And then and I don't see a lot of people even at LSU talking about this as much, but with the conference realignment that should be coming, depending on how they divvy up the East and the West, we could, you know, our this game we're talking about that we're previewing this coming Saturday could end up being a cross divisional rivalry.
Yep.
Because it would make a lot more geographic sense for us to stay in the West and y'all to go to the East with Auburn. And if that opens up, then I really think that there's I'm not gonna say it's a definite, because we've seen the past two seasons LSU can fall from grace faster than Devontae Smith on a post route. But if LSU gets this right and the realignment happens and everything like that, it could really be LSU and Alabama in the same way that it is, you know, nowadays it's pretty much Alabama, maybe A&M, maybe LSU, and Georgia.
Yep.
In that, you know, East versus West. So it's an important hire. I think it's an important hire for even for just for fans of the sport in general, just to pay attention to.
No, I think you make a good point. And I think, and I'll say it, you know, Billy Napier may not be as big of a name as what LSU is hunting for. And look, if I were LSU, I would probably feel the same way. When I look at the names, I have a hard time, and maybe it's recency bias on watching Saturday's game, but Mel Tucker's name keeps bubbling back up. And as far as I can remember, you guys have had pretty good success going into Michigan State.
Yeah.
Hey, well, let's talk about maybe closer to the field, not all the way onto the field, unfortunately. But LSU has had, you know, quite a run of injuries this season. I think I saw somewhere that 40 players have missed time. That's an astounding number. There's some players, you guys coming off the bye, there's some players that are expected to be ready to play Saturday, but maybe not even yet ready to practice. Talk about has it been a string of light kind injuries or just crazy bad luck?
I mean, I think that, and from people I've talked to, it's a lot of injuries, but it's a lot of, I don't know. You never want to say, oh, they're not injured, or oh, this, I don't know about that. But with the way the season's gone, there's definitely a feeling around the program of you don't want to jeopardize your future. And if it's a borderline injury, let's just shut it down now, because you'll come back. Either you come back next year, or you're going to the NFL next year. And, you know, let's just calm it down. And with the way that the leadership has gone from one, basically firing your coach without firing him, which is a strange move. I don't know if I've ever seen that happen before. I don't know if it's ever really been done. Definitely not the way that it is going, where Orgeron gave a press conference, like, you know, 6 hours ago, where he talked about the game plan for Alabama, but everyone knows he's not doing anything really. So I don't envy the position these players are in. I honestly wouldn't, you know, some of the players that we've got Kayshon Boutte, he's out, he's not playing. Stingley's not playing. Rick's not playing. Some of the big names, you know, we might get a few guys back who kind of maybe came out early, you know, against Ole Miss, or kind of had some dings, but anybody who is borderline, I don't think they're gonna strap on the pads and really just make a could be in a way that maybe 3 years ago, right, when y'all came here, Joe Burrow played, and it was never, nobody knew until afterwards he was playing with like a torn, banged up shoulder. He still played because it was LSU Alabama.
Right.
This is not that kind of game.
It's not that. Okay. Yeah. That's fair. That's I like the way you sort of threaded the needle on that one. Good breakdown. Talk about, you know, trying to get a little further away from the injury topic, but it's hard to talk about positions without it. Talk about quarterback Max Johnson. He really took over the position when Miles Brennan went down, off-season injury, pre-camp injury. He's transferring now, so there's probably a storyline there. But talk about Max, 20 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, you know, 2,000 yards, about 60% completion. How's he progressed? What is he doing right?
You know, I think Max he's an interesting guy, doesn't have a ton of arm strength in the same way that, like, Miles Brennan is the guy who had a cannon.
Yep.
And he could throw it around. But Miles is the curious case of Miles Brennan. He'd been there. I mean, it's almost like I think it's his fifth year now. He's transferring. People say like, oh, well, that's weird. Why is he transferring? He potentially could have 7 years of college football, mm-hmm, because of a medical red shirt and then the COVID red shirt. So he's got 2 more years on the potential for him. I think it is interesting that he's moving on. It shows that within that locker room, there's a lot of discussion. We kind of had a quarterback controversy going into the season. Obviously, Max Johnson got the nod because of the injury, but I think that him transferring shows, Miles Brennan announcing today he's transferring, shows that that competition probably is a little bit further than you thought it was, or that it was alluded to. But that being said, I don't think, you know, to answer your question about progression, I haven't seen a ton of progression that I would like to see from a Max Johnson, but I don't know if you can really blame that on him.
Yeah,
because I just don't know. Jake Peets seems like, he seems like a nice guy. I was on a Zoom call with him one time, a booster thing where they sent out you could just listen to him talk. Seems super nice. Seemed, you know, engaging and everything, but I don't really think that they've developed him well. And that's kind of been the MO for LSU. That's been the Achilles heel. We have never been able to successfully develop a quarterback. You know, the old joke is that, you know, Les Miles used to recruit top quarterbacks and then move them to wide receiver. Right. And so, you know, or go recruit dual threat quarterbacks and make them just hang in the pocket and try to be Peyton Manning. It just doesn't work. And we thought we'd kind of gotten it right with Burrow, but it seemed like Burrow actually just kind of developed himself. You have to give a little more credit to Ensminger, or maybe a little bit credit to Joe Brady, but all those pieces have kind of, I think the Brady thing is a little bit overblown. A lot of people, Brady's the hot name. He's the young guy, but you know, I've, from what I've heard, you know, it was a lot more of just kind of a team effort, I guess. But, you know, Max, I think he's got a lot of potential still. I will say I'm interested in Nussmeier. I like seeing him play against Ole Miss. He's got a little bit of a spark. He'll sling it. Max is a little bit more methodical with the way he throws the ball. I think you'll probably see that, especially against a vaunted defense like Alabama's going to have on. So the thing with Max also, we haven't seen, so I can't really speak to his progression because they really haven't let him play his game. He's more of a dual threat guy. I wouldn't say he's dual threat in the same way like a speed demon dual threat guy is, but he's got a few wheels and he's not afraid to run the ball. But I mean, even if you listen to Orgeron's, especially early in the season, you listen to his press conferences, he basically said, we don't want to run him.
Yeah.
And then it was, you know, we, especially because of Miles Brennan going down and there's really a lack of depth with TJ Finley transferring out. So I don't know. I think the jury's still out on Max Johnson. I look for him to have an improved, it all depends on this hire though. We always, you know, it seems like we're going back to this coaching hire, but we've had so many, you know, we've had people transfer out. We've had people, I almost say de facto opt out or, you know, or it have injuries that they've choosing to, you know, let's just go and get surgery now, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
If you get this, if you nail this hire, you can retain a lot of this talent. Maybe you can develop that quarterback, but if you don't, I do worry. I think that he could take that next step next year and be a great quarterback for LSU. I think he's got the tools and he's got the pedigree and everything, but I could see him, if he's not developed properly, I could see him being a Mettenberger or Jarrett Lee, you know, good, not great.
Yeah. What do you think about, you know, I saw Garrett Nussmeier has played in 3 games. There's at least a spoken intent to redshirt him. So he might just play in one more game. I don't know, you know, if you're wanting to give him quality reps and sort of bring him along. I don't know if Saturday's the day for that, but what is your thought on Nussmeier and when, you know, should they take the red shirt off and put him in, or how would you sort of bring him along with what you're hearing inside the program there?
You know, I haven't heard a ton about Nussmeier I think it does say something. I don't hear a ton, but I think that there's a reason for that. I like the red shirt. I think that there's no point in, like, let's just be honest. And I don't know if we're going to do like straight up predictions and everything like that. LSU's not going to win this game. Like, I don't think anybody in the right mind is going to say that. I don't think LSU's really predicted. I don't think anybody at LSU thinks they're going to win this game. There's no point in wasting at potentially, you know, messing up Garrett Nussmeier's development by throwing him into to probably one of the most hostile environments in college football against a team that's going to be playing in the college football playoff. We have a beat up and frankly untalented offensive line that's been a struggle for us the entire year. That's another thing that where I really think you can't really, the jury's still out on Max Johnson, because he really has no time to throw it at all.
Right.
And when he does get time, or when he kind of makes it for himself, he's scrambling around. He doesn't really get time to set his feet and actually throw. So I feel like with Nussmeier, I hope they do redshirt him. I haven't heard one way or the other, you know, anything more than you know, what you've said as far as like an insider info. I do think it's interesting. So you're going to have potentially you'll have LSU will have Max Johnson his junior year next year, a sophomore or redshirt freshman year for Nussmeier next year, and then a true freshman in Walker Howard, who's the number one quarterback in the country right now, kind of, with an asterisk by his name, because Quinn Ewers was the number one, and now he reclassified. But people like to say he's the number one in the country, which number two is no slouch either. So he's very, very good, very, very good, pure pocket passer. LSU should have an interesting and competitive quarterback, you know, discussion next year. But again, you know, people were talking about it, like what I don't think LSU necessarily has somebody on their radar that with this scheme, but imagine if you bring a guy in who wants to have a true dual threat read option attack, then you might see Walker Howard walk and go somewhere else. So there's so many moving pieces right now. You know, I don't think this is happening, but there could be pressure from pressure to do whatever Nussmeier kind of wants to do, because he might be saying, well, look, I might be transferring too. So I don't know about that. I obviously that's going to be kept under wraps, but there's a lot of turmoil right now.
Yeah, that makes sense. Talk about the you mentioned the offensive line. Talk about them a little bit. Tackle Anthony Bradford. He started at both tackles over the course of the season. He's been ruled out for the season. Left tackle Cam Wire is returning, and guard Chasen Hines is returning. Is that the offensive line getting better, or is it more just shuffling bodies? It's been that kind of year.
It's a total shuffle. I wouldn't say we have a elite offensive lineman on this line. And I mean, that's no disrespect to them, but they're just not SEC top of the barrel talent, you know, and that's something that LSU, if you follow LSU, you know, that's where they struggle for some reason. And I can't tell you why. The state of Louisiana can put out wide receivers. They put out wide before LSU was good. They put out wide receivers. Yep. They can put out quarterbacks. Before LSU was good, they were putting out quarterbacks. Running backs, we got a billion of them. Even quarterbacks, we've had, you know, decent time producing quarterbacks. Go look at Dak Prescott, who's competing to win a Super Bowl. He was overlooked. He wanted to go to LSU, and Les Miles said, "Nah, you're not good enough for me." Now that's more of a testament to LSU, I think, than Dak's talent in high school, but. There's something about the offensive line development that just doesn't really happen here. And LSU's recruiting hotbed really is, it starts in the boot. And you know, you look at our team, it's something that, and I think you see a little bit with Alabama, but of course Alabama is more of a national brand now. But one thing that is kind of cool about LSU is a lot of times you'll see 90% of the team you can pick where they're from in Louisiana. I'm from Monroe, and you know, some of my favorite players that have played for LSU, I know, like Rashard Lawrence, who was a star senior defensive tackle for LSU in the 2019 championship year. He went to high school 5 minutes from my mom's house where I grew up. So as far as the offensive line goes, we just don't have a ton of talent in the state of Louisiana. We've tried to go to the transfer portal. Our starting center is Liam Shanahan, who is a transfer from or grad transfer from Harvard. But Ivy League is not the
that's not SEC. Where you go to get SEC linemen. So, on the regular, yep.
Yeah, and you know what? And the thing is, he's a classmate of mine. He's in the MBA program as well. So I'm not going to rag on him, but it's just different. It's the same thing as when you talk about you know, I'm sure you're kind of you and your friends are looking at Cincinnati and saying, okay, like, well, is Cincinnati in the playoff? Or,
sure.
I think most people would say that's going to be they might be able to compete, but it's just not the same.
It's not the same. No, that's fair. That's fair. Talk about the skill positions. Running back has sort of burst out. Tyron Davis Price, you know, Kayshawn Boutte at wide receiver, but he's out. He's one of those guys.
Who are we looking for at the skill positions? Who are the players we need to watch when trying to get the ball in their hand?
I think that a name that jumps out to me initially, and he's been basically good all year, he's a tough guy, is Jack Besh. He's a wide receiver out of Lafayette. Interestingly, he played with Walker Howard, who we talked about. They played in high school together, and he's a true freshman who's played a lot for LSU this entire year. And pretty much every time he catches the ball, there's, you know, something good happens, and he's not afraid to you know, take on a hit. He's not afraid to make a move. I like him. I think he's somebody who could provide a spark. I don't see Davis Price he's had a good couple past games. It seems like he's finally figured it out, and it's kind of interesting because it's like, where's this guy been? It's like he learned how to, it's like he opened his eyes, but I don't see him having a breakout game again against this Alabama defense. I just think it's going to be different than even Florida, where he broke the single game rushing record for LSU in that game. I just don't think it's going to be the way it's going to go for him. He kind of reminds me of, I wouldn't say like Davis Price reminds me a little bit of Mark Ingram, not Alabama Mark Ingram, but more of like New Orleans Saints Mark Ingram. Sure. Runs for 3 yards and kind of falls over. But again, like he's proven a lot of people wrong and has had a great stretch of games. Again, as far as another skill positions, I mean, Malik Nabers has been good. He's a freshman wide receiver. There's a ton of wide receiver depth, and it's kind of like take your pick. There's a ton of these talented wide receivers for LSU. It's just, we haven't been able to give them the ball. Of course, when you have a guy like Kayshon Boutte on the field, you're going to play through him. Yeah. But even when he was, even before he was injured, we were not utilizing that talent to the way we should have. So, I think Jack Besh is someone who he's kind of become a little bit of a security blanket for Max. I think you'll see him maybe, you know, lean on him and try to get him the ball. And he's a guy who could make a move and kind of run off.
Which tight end is going to give us trouble? There's only 6 receptions at the tight end. Cole Taylor, he looks like a big old boy, 6'7", 243. And Jack Mashburn, 6'2", 218. They both seem receiver types, but not catching a lot of balls. Is that just a function of just the malaise across the offense, or is that schematic? They're just not part of Coach O's system.
Well, you see, so Cole Taylor is the more receiving tight end. Mashburn is actually a guy who was kind of brought in to aid in the production of that run offense. So you saw a lot more of Mashburn against Florida and then against Ole Miss after that than you saw at the beginning of the year. And he was in there, you know, running like those powers and those and the counters. And you know, going on and trying to take on a linebacker, or taking on even trying to take on a defensive end, you know, chip a defensive end, something like that. So I think if you see, you know, I'm sure Alabama's keying on this too. It's like when Mashburn comes in, he's probably going to be helping to run. That's not to say he can't catch the ball, but as I've seen it, you know, Mashburn is more of the blocking tight end, and Taylor is. I'm not going to say he's the sure on receiving tight end, but he's just not the blocking tight end.
I got you. Well, he's a big old body. He seems like if he could get loose in the middle and Max had a second to throw the ball, tight ends give us trouble. So
I think that's a place where you'll see Jack Besh too.
Okay.
They play him as an interior hybrid tight end slot type receiver. He's got the speed. He played wide receiver in high school. He's got the speed to play wide receiver. He's got the hands and everything, but he was actually brought in to kind of fill, you know, with the whole Eric Gilbert saga. So we had Eric Gilbert, who was the number one all world tight end recruit, basically played 3 games for us or something. Yep. Jack Besh was actually brought in as kind of that replacement. Not that you can replace a guy like that, because he's just so physically gifted, but that time of skill set where he's not afraid to body you up. He can play physical. He can, you know, putting Jack Besh on a linebacker. Now, unless you got like Christian Harris, who played cornerback in high school, just 5 minutes from where I'm recording this podcast right now. But against most linebackers who are probably not great in pass coverage, a guy like Jack Besh can give you a lot of trouble. And so I think that's kind of where LSU tries to that he kind of fills that tight end, that receiving tight end mismatch role.
That'll be fun to watch. I think there are opportunities for mismatch there. Let's flip the field and talk defense. There's quite a number of players on defense that look like they're having good seasons, but still quite a number that are going to sit out as well. What kind of scheme can Alabama fans expect the Tigers to run, and who are some of the key players to watch out for?
You know, that with Durante Jones, the new defensive coordinator, a lot of LSU fans have really struggled with figuring out what exactly he wants to do. And a lot of whispers inside the program say, we haven't really seen Durante Jones's real idea of what he wants to do. He came in, brought in as a multiple guy, because that's kind of how the game is today. You got to run multiple schemes. You know, you'll see a little bit of 3-4, you'll see a little bit of 4-3, you'll see some 4-2-5. I think that for your fans, Damone Clark has been somebody who has led the team in tackles. He was a guy I was not high on. At the beginning of the year, I thought LSU had a lot of questions at linebacker. He's a guy who was an all-world recruit, and you thought he was going to be the next Devin White, and he just hadn't panned out. It seems like he's finally kind of put it together. And, you know, he had 19 tackles against Ole Miss, which it's, you know, pretty impressive. You know, BJ Ojulari is another one to look for. He's probably the most talented guy on this that's going to be playing on Saturday. You know, he's a great pass rusher, kind of hybrid outside linebacker type. I think he's liable to you know, get past a tackle and make a sack at least once. Yeah. I'm sure Alabama's going to have to account for him and really wonder and, you know, look for him wherever he is on the field. LSU, of course, you know, for your fans who know LSU generally, like typically you'd say, oh, it's DBU, but I think you're not going to really get to see a ton of great cornerback play or great defensive back play. Not that we've got some good guys. Dwight McLaughlin's a good player, and so is Cordell Flott, but you're not going to see Stingley. You're not going to see Ricks, who are probably the top two cornerbacks in the country.
You know, Mason Smith, interior defensive lineman, true freshman, certainly someone that Alabama recruited. Looks like he's having it's probably situational play. I'm just looking at stats, but it looks like he's put up some pressure, some sacks from the inside. And Ojulari on the outside, boy, if he lines up on LSU's defensive left, then he's going to give Chris Owens a long day, our right tackle. And Alabama fans will know that I've been on Chris Owens for most of the season, so watch out for that that matchup. Talk about, you mentioned him. Talk about Derek Stingley. From a distance, it seems like, and I don't know all of the situation, certainly as a freshman, he was incredibly well-regarded, and I think justifiably so. I think he sat out most of last season, and I don't remember all the details. And then this season, it's not a dissimilar situation. I don't know all of the circumstances on that. I see him projected as a top-ranked draft pick, and there's a part of me that just says, and it doesn't matter who he plays for. It doesn't matter that it's LSU. It doesn't matter. But and I say, man, is he going to draft that high based on an outstanding, you know, freshman season and then a couple of seasons of really not playing? That challenges me a little bit. How is he going to go down? And I'm forecasting a little bit. How is he going to go down in sort of the lore for Tiger fans?
You know, and I think I might be a minority on this. I think that Derek Stingley has been an overall disappointment in a lot of ways. Now, I'm not taking away anything from what he did in the freshman season. It was an incredible season. I remember him coming in, people saying he's going to be the best ever. He's going to be better than Tyrann Mathieu. He's going to be better than Patrick Peterson. And in a lot of ways, his freshman year was phenomenal. He had an important pick against Auburn. He had an important pick against Florida. He had a pick six against Georgia in the SEC championship. But, you know, since then, you're right. Like, he hasn't played a lot, and some of that is beyond his control. Some of it is, and you know, you can kind of, I think there are a lot of Tiger fans that argue about how much beyond his control it is. But I think that I don't know if, you know, I know for a fact in my mind, he's not above Tyrann Mathieu. Tyrann Mathieu is the pinnacle. I don't think he's above Patrick Peterson, but I also will say that with a caveat. I don't know if it's necessarily his fault. I think it might be the way the game is moving. And I think it's something that's sad. You know, we like, for me, I love this. I love college football. I like college football so much better than the NFL because it's not as much of a, or at least in a, especially when Patrick Peterson or Tyrann Mathieu or some of those great Alabama teams, like the, you know, 2011, 2012 teams that, you know, I'm sure 2010, those teams that, you enjoyed watching, it's the game has definitely changed. Mm-hmm. And I think that Derek Stingley is making, he's much more of a professional at 20 years old than Patrick Peterson was at 20 years old.
Okay.
And that's beside, take NIL out of it. I don't care about NIL in this comp, but that the, I'll say, you know, Tyrann Mathieu, I don't think there would have ever been a question that Tyrann Mathieu would have suited up and played for the Tigers unless he was in a hospital bed. Same thing with Patrick Peterson. Same thing with so many of the great LSU players that we've talked about over, you know, over the course of the years. But I think there is a shift that's happened within the sport. And to answer your question about Stingley in the draft, I totally buy that he'll be a top 10 draft pick, just for the fact that in the NFL, you know, he can go out there and play two downs and put a guy on an absolute island, and you never hear that guy's name. You know, you never hear Amari Cooper's name for the entire game that he's played, but then but also Stingley never makes a tackle, or he never has to take on a blocker, because it's just, and that's perfectly fine. And he's worth every penny to that GM who drafts him. It's not the same way in college football. And that's something I've criticized him for. There's a big play against, in the very first game of the season against UCLA, where it looked like Stingley just kind of let the running back run off and score. And, you know, that was something to me where it was like Tyrann Mathieu wouldn't let that happen. Patrick Peterson wouldn't let that happen, you know, and I think that's, but I'm not going to hold that against him. I think it's just different. It's different now.
No, that's fair. That's fair. It'll be interesting to, you know, as it unfolds, you know, you remember back players on teams and maybe it's specific plays. Maybe it's just the confidence, you know, the identity they had on the team and the confidence you had that, hey, that side of the field is locked down. And it feels like, again, I speak from a distance, it feels like the memory will be, yeah, it seems like Derek Stingley was on the team, but it seems more hollow after that, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that Derek Stingley will be remembered more as part of the 2019 season, as, man, that 2019 season was incredible. Remember, we had Joe, we had Clyde, we had Derek Stingley. He'll be more remembered as part of that team than he will be as himself.
Yeah.
He will not be the Honey Badger. He will not be Patrick Peterson. He won't be a singular player, even Glenn Dorsey or, you know, a guy like that who was on a good team and then won a national championship, but you remember him for him. I don't think Derek Stingley is going to be that way. And it's almost blasphemy for me to say that while he's like in Baton Rouge right now, but
right. No, that's fair. Let me ask you this. You know, not breaking news, you know, Vegas has put out a line for the game, and you know, Coach O has a reputation, be it in an interim head coach position or now some sort of strange, you know, short timer, coming off a bye week. He is renowned for motivating his players. Is this sort of a weird sort of witch's brew, Coach O scenario that magic happens Saturday, or is Vegas got a number that's pretty good?
Is it 29 and a half? That's what I saw. Yeah, it's around there. I mean, I think that's a big number. I think it's a big number for any game.
It is.
I mean, I'd say that, you know, that's probably a big number for when you're playing. You talked about playing Mercer earlier, you know, whoever. Yeah. But I do think that that's probably one I'll avoid. I think if I had to, gun to my head, I'd probably bet it on Alabama, just because, I mean, I don't know if you heard about this, but last week, but LSU didn't even practice last week. They didn't have enough people to make Wednesday and Thursday practices. Between all the talented players opting out, injured, transfer portal, we didn't even talk about this, but one of our wide receivers, Coy Moore, who's a standout four-star guy out of New Orleans, he entered the transfer portal, so he's not playing. I have a hard time, you know, maybe we keep it close, or I wouldn't even say keep it close. Maybe we cover, but I don't like this game. I don't think this is going to be a potential. I don't think this is like the Florida game. Yeah. You know, like I don't think we're gonna be wowed the way that LSU fans were at 11 a.m. on a Saturday against Florida.
Right. Fair enough. All right, let me get you out on an easy one. You've probably already given me your answer in terms of the conversation, but an easy, fun question. Who's your favorite Tiger?
Favorite, it's gotta be Tyrann Mathieu.
Okay.
I the first ever podcast I recorded was a tryout to be on the podcast that I'm on. And I recorded about Tyrann Mathieu because I think that it's a little bit, you know, right when I was starting to really pay attention, not just like watch college football, but when I was falling in love with college football was when he was the Honey Badger. And that, you know, that was an incredible season. I don't think anybody has ever made as many plays as he did. I don't know if anybody has ever been, I think I would argue this to the death. I don't think anybody was ever as deserving of a Heisman as he was. And I think if he hadn't had the drug issue, he would have won it. You know, he was electric on the field. And you see him, and he's kind of the same way now in the NFL. Like I said, I'm not a huge NFL fan, but I love to watch him play it for the Chiefs. So yeah, it's gotta be Tyrann Mathieu.
No, that's fair. I think, you know, Booger McFarland, certainly someone I appreciated watching. Kevin Falk was certainly a lot of fun. And, on my sheet of paper, I've got Tyrann Mathieu as well. And my thought with him is, oh man, I hated him. And that's just, you know, a statement of respect because he was so good. He could make plays from everywhere. It seems like there was a stretch where, you know, it was a turnover or a touchdown or something. Every week he was doing something from a different angle, from a different position. And it was one of those guys like, ah. Man, I hate going up against him. And
well, there's that iconic photo of him and is it who would have been? Would it have been Amari Cooper or in the game of the century 2011? Him and them jawing at each other. I mean, that, you know, he was part of that game, which I remember watching that. Just you know, that's something that I feel like you'll never, you know, that's something we'll never see again, especially with the way the sport is going. I rewatched that one over the summer, and you know, it was a different time. It was, you actually got to see defenses really, really, really dominate. And, you know, he was the premier, he was the Deion Sanders of our life or of my lifetime. Yeah. I didn't get to see Deion be Deion, but that was, you know, what he was.
That was a phenomenal game. Just the tension, you know, a couple, you know, swapping field goals, very, very low score. And, there was a, we did a podcast on that game sort of back in the day, and what the atmosphere of that game there in Tuscaloosa, it reminded me of, and this is a silly analogy, but you just had to be there. You ever watch like the old Scooby-Doo where it's a foggy night and Scooby will cut out a donut from the fog and eat it? That was the tension. The tension was that sort of tangible in the air for that game. And damn it, I guess another player I should add to my list is Eric Reed because he came up big that night as well.
I mean, I remember. So I was watching that game from during high school. I worked for a catering business, and we would cater weddings. And so somebody had decided to have their wedding reception on the night of the LSU Alabama game, but. It just, you know, as a PSA for anybody, I'm sure everybody listening to this podcast knows, but like, don't do it.
Don't do that.
Because guess what? There were more catering workers at that reception than there were guests.
Right.
And so towards the end of the, towards the, like the beginning or end of the first quarter, my boss kind of looked at me and was like, hey, just go watch it. We're good. We don't need you anymore. So I got paid to watch that game.
Nice.
I remember it got to the point where, and of course, like you said, the tension, it was going back and forth through training field goals. No one could move the ball. And it got to the point where the family of the wedding party was all crowded around the TV. And then we were all just standing around them. So we all watched it together. I remember it vividly, especially like the Eric Reed interception where, you know, catches it and comes down with it. It was an iconic moment. I think it was a really important game for college football.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's something you'll probably won't see ever again.
Right. Right. No, it was phenomenal. I completely agree. Completely agree. Well, Tommy, this has been phenomenal. I appreciate your time. I appreciate you joining us. Alabama fans, this is Talking Tigs podcast. Tommy, we appreciate you having on, having you on. And I would say after Saturday, good luck down the stretch.
Yeah, thank you. All right. we'll keep in touch. So it was great being with you.
Absolutely. Hey, welcome back, podcast fans. I hope you enjoyed the interview. It was a lot of fun talking ball with Tommy, talking LSU and players of the past, and certainly looking forward to the game on Saturday. It's interesting to see, as we do with these shows, right, sort of the spirit, the attitude, not attitude in a negative way, but sort of the spirit that opposing fans have coming into a game. Earlier in the season, it was interesting to see Miami really excited about the game. Florida really excited about the game. And as we get to the second half of the season, it's going to be interesting to see maybe some of the expectations that fans may have. And the LSU fan base seems to be down, but optimistic. They're a fantastic recruiting base. And so if they get the right coach in there, they can be dangerous. And so that's why we were hoping they would keep Coach O. And we're hoping they kind of flub this higher up as well. But nonetheless, it was a lot of fun talking with Talking Tigs podcast. And I appreciate you guys listening here. With that, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.